What the Bible teaches about creation, nature, and what our world, our society believes about creation and nature are one of the points where faith and our society bang heads into each other sharply. We sort of know that. So I want to talk about that, and I want to reshape a little bit what we think the problem actually is. I think it gets oversimplified, and we're a little sometimes misled, but the basic problem is very big. I want to explain more carefully where our faith and our society differ, and how we understand nature has to do with this. The first two chapters of the Bible are not just old creation stories. They are, and the readings we just did show that. God, the maker of heaven and earth, fills the scripture, and it is fundamental to our faith in God. Before we get to people, before we get to nature, let's talk about people. Gullible humans. People care about what's right and wrong, and it matters if something's true or false. We can be passionate about our views and argue with all our might. But for all our interest and energy, we disagree with each other about many things. There are all kinds of things that some people are sure are right and others are sure are wrong. All kinds of human knowledge is like this. We care about what's right and wrong, and we cannot reliably find it. Our decider fails us. Our compass is broken. Our thinking and reason make mistakes. Humans cannot reliably figure out what is true and what is false. We are all easily fooled. What we have is the ability to choose a voice we will trust. We can choose a voice and trust the voice, but our decision maker is not very good. Furthermore, what gets us in trouble is that one claim to truth is more attractive than another. Our search for truth ends up being searching for reasons to support the truth we like, and a search for reasons why the other one is wrong. I remember when my first wife left, I was reading the Bible to figure out whether or not God gave me freedom to remarry. In the church, some said no, some said yes. Which was right? Before God, could I remarry or not? The Bible was not clear to me. But a bigger problem was that I was hopelessly biased. I wanted freedom to remarry. I was not an honest truth seeker. I was a biased truth seeker. We're all like this. We are more attracted to one explanation of the truth than another. And we think we're going by reason and our hunger for the truth. But we are not. We're gullible. We can't get out of it. So, we need to pick to whom we will listen. That is an essential choice here, and that is more or less the only choice we have. The Bible creation. The Bible begins with the two creation stories we saw last week. God made everything, and God sustains everything. He made it at the beginning, and He keeps it all going, and He's not finished with it, right? The Apostles' Creed begins, I believe in God the Father, the maker of heaven and earth. And ongoing, Daniel tells the Babylonian king, you did not honor the God who holds in his hand your life and all your ways. Every pagan and believer lives like that. Paul told the philosophers in Athens, God himself gives everyone life and breath and everything else. God made it and he carries it. And he's not finished. It's everywhere. All right, that's the biblical story. Now, opposed to that, I'm going to talk about the great invention of the West. Western society, by which I mean Western Europe and North America, over the last 500 years, this did not start with Darwin in the late 1700s. This started about the year 1500, has invented a particular view of creation, of nature. And the great invention of the West is that nature can be understood and explained entirely on its own terms. Nothing outside of nature explains nature. Everything we see can be understood and explained by what we see and study. No God necessary. So, let me put this in different ways. The great invention of the West denies that there is any interaction at all between the spiritual world and the material world. There is no interaction between the supernatural world and the natural world. There's no communication back and forth, no exchange whatsoever. The material world, the natural world, can be explained without anything spiritual or supernatural. There's no spiritual forces, there are no demons, good or bad, there's no magic, there's no creating God. This view, which I'm calling the great invention of the West, because I read that line in a book, is a profoundly spiritual statement. That view assumes a great knowledge of what the spiritual world does and does not do. The people who hold this have no knowledge of what the spiritual world does and does not do. But the claim is they have great knowledge. To say the spiritual world does not act on the material world assumes deep knowledge of the spiritual world, which of course science does not have. Rain falls down because of evaporation over the oceans and the sun and change in elevation and temperature change and so on. All those things we can see and understand. The people who understand how rain works have no idea if any spiritual force is in action or not. You don't know. But the great invention of the West proclaims its answer: no spiritual force or supernatural energy is in force here at all, because we can explain it otherwise. There's never been a society like this, any part of the world, until our modern society. There have been individuals, but not a society. One way or another, people always could see that the spiritual world is involved in their material world. That things are going back on. Every faith and religion and tribe and nation assumed that. Until the modern invention of the West. They affect each other, but not anymore. I'm getting this from a book called A Secular Age by Charles Taylor, a Canadian philosopher from Montreal, published in 2007. If you want this stuff, email me the details. It's 800 pages long. The print is small. It is not an easy read. It took me a long time. You don't want it. Taylor is trying to answer this question. Why was it almost impossible not to believe in God in the year 1500? And why is it so difficult to believe in God in 2000? In the West, why was it almost impossible not to believe in God in 1500? And why is it so difficult to believe in God in 2000? What happened in those 500 years? How did the West become so secular? Taylor believes in God. He's an old Roman Catholic, but he's not arguing for God. He writes the book because how we usually explain this change and understand it is not how it happened. He is disgusted with the explanations of how this happened. He knows where we started and where we ended up. So I'm going to do this. Today we're just talking about creation, and so I want us to help you understand the society we live in. But one of the points I want to make here, folks, is that this invention is the enemy, not evolution. The invention is the enemy, not evolution. Evolution is just a tool in this. We're going to talk about that. Here's another book. Ellen Chapman, Slaying the Dragons, Destroying Myths and the History of Science and Faith. Our science and faith, particularly Christianity, inevitably in conflict, as the new atheists proclaim. Have they not always been so? Weren't scientists hounded for their discoveries until Darwin burst on the scene and sent faith packing? Not if you look at the facts, says Ellen Chapman, who teaches the history of science at the University of Oxford. Science and faith grew up together. They always got along very well, always, until very recently people have said they never got along. But that is one of the myths he's trying to destroy. If you want to know how evolution, all these things fit together. That's another book of somebody who believes in God. So what we have is two views of the world. The Bible view, a creator God who made everything and keeps it going. And then we have a nature that began and continues completely on its own without anything supernatural. That's a very different view of reality. We could hardly exaggerate what a different view that is of the world in which we live in. In the West, actually, Christians have absorbed quite a bit of the great invention of the West. But we're not going to get into that now. But the basic story, we live in a society that in 1500 assumed a creator God who made everything and kept it going. And in 2000, we live in a secular age that believes all of nature began on its own and continues on its own. That is where we live. It is a discouraging time to live. But that's just the reality. I think that reason and evidence are somewhat overrated in all of this side. Within the view that nature began and continues on its own, there are some good arguments. That view can explain most things well. In that view, if you look around and you see a creator God, you've been fooled. You've been deceived. Within the view that God made everything, there are many supporting arguments. The Bible can explain everything. If you step outside and look around and you don't see evidence for God, you've been fooled. You've been deceived. So both sides, and listen, there are smart people on both sides of this. You can't say one side has all the reason and the other side are dummies. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. I don't like this. I want the evidence to show that my faith in God is right. And I do believe, without doubt, that reason is on my side. But so do many people who believe in the great invention of the West. And that's true. And they're not all evil. They're deceived. I want to talk about attractive truth here. We talked at the beginning about people being gullible. In the year 1500, I want to shift in what kind of person is good. In the year 1500, a man or woman that believed God and the Bible, attended Christian worship, lived an upright life, was respected. Not everybody did this in 1500 by any means, but it was a respected person. In 1500, a person who deviated from all of these, who violated all these, was a deviant. They were a social problem. They were not thinking clearly. By 1750, before Darwin and Origin of Species, which was a little later in the 1700s, this had changed a lot. By 1750, a person who questioned the Bible and the old faith, who ignored the long traditions of the church, was a noble, courageous person. Such a person was noble because they let clear thinking and reason and evidence take them away from what was old and comfortable. Okay, they were seen as people whose courage and clear thinking were taking them away from what was old and comfortable. They were courageous and they were willing to leave faith in God behind, which had helped them, but now they were following their higher human intuitions. Can you see a prejudice here about which truth is more attractive? Boldly going where people had not gone before. That was not the only view in society, but by 1750, there were lots of voices thinking like that. It was clear by then, and it has grown since. And none of that got there because of science. Okay, none of that got there because of science. It was other reasons entirely. And by 1750, a person who trusted in God and believed the Bible and attended worship and lived according to the instructions of Scripture was choosing comfort and tradition over reason. The godly person lived in a chosen ignorance and lacked courage to follow higher human thinking and reason. We're talking here about one view of truth being more attractive than another. And if you're a seeker and you're hearing two versions, society slants you immensely to one. You want to be the noble person. You want to be courageous. You want to follow clear thinking. In a society like that, if you have a choice between that and believing a faith and a book and a church that's been around for centuries and centuries, which will people choose? So that's the world we live in, and that's why it works. Make no mistake, the great invention of the West is a lot more attractive in our society than I believe in God the Father, maker and carrier of heaven and earth. One is a lot more attractive than the other. So hold on to the faith we profess, which includes faith in God our Father. When you see things in nature that reflect God, tell Him so. Tell Him so. Keep this thing alive. Let me talk about Darwin and evolution for a little bit. I do not think Darwin and evolution are the core of the problem. Some evolution of species is not the enemy. I don't think so. Why is it improbable that God would make species to adapt to harsh environments? Why is that improbable? There's nothing wrong with that. In Genesis 1, it says, "Let the earth produce living creatures according to their kinds." That's quite different than "let there be living creatures according to their kinds." If I was a Christian evolutionist, I would get a lot of mileage out of that line. Let the earth produce living creatures according to their kinds. What Darwin said, though, was that this was all by chance, that species adapted randomly. The problem is not evidence for evolution. It is this statement that it all happened by chance and randomly. He has no idea whether that happened by chance or random. Lots of things look random. There's no end of that. But we have a God, and he says that's not the way to view these things. So when Darwin's book was first published, you know, lots of Christian leaders liked that. They did not see a problem. They took his random chance with a grain of salt. They assumed there's a creator God behind this. But the rest of this, they accepted. Not everybody did, but it was not unusual at first for Christian leaders to accept what he said. People since then have pushed it the way that it wasn't at the start. So listen, evidence for evolution is not the enemy. Why does Darwin say that species improve by random chance? Why not by God? Why is our society willing to accept that development of species is totally random? Our society wants that. Listen, evidence for evolution is not the problem. It's this interpretation and this desire to expect it, to accept it as totally random. Why does society think evolution is a good idea to leave God? That doesn't make any sense, that evolution of species isn't a reason to leave God. Why was a decent amount of society ready to go down that road before Darwin ever wrote? Okay, these are the forces. The answer to these questions is the voice of our enemy, much more directly than how much evidence there is for evolution. There is an enemy out there, but it's closer to the invention of the West and not evolution. Evolution could be taught as part of how God did things, but it never is. Okay, that's the problem. It's assuming that these things are just equated. As soon as you're talking about evolution, then God's not in the picture. But listen, the pagans have done that and the Christians have done that. But we can do better. I don't know what we're going to do about these things in detail, but I just want you to understand the world we live in and what the real enemies are here. And so this kind of thing, this version, he's doing in simpler words what my longer book is doing. And it's a pretty good book if you're interested in these things. It's a history of science and faith. Why do we believe? I'm going to give you three reasons to keep believing in the essential biblical truth that God began everything and He keeps it going and He's not finished with it. We read about that too. Those are great scriptures before. These are work for me, and people have different, anyway, this is how I would defend my faith. One, God thinks creation itself has made Him abundantly and overwhelmingly clear. Nature itself shows a God of power and beauty and nature and order. A God who likes tiny details and vast, incredible spaces. And if we can walk outside, if you need to go, you're gone. We can walk outside, take care of brother. You can walk outside and not see God and worship and thank Him. God Himself is mystified. They have eyes. Can they not see? That's how it looks to God. In God's mind, His glory fills the whole earth. And you cannot step outside the door without seeing it. He thinks He's made Himself obvious to people. So this is how it looks to God. So that's one of the reasons. Creation itself is a very good reason to believe. Two, God has done two central acts in history. One in the Old Testament, one in the New Testament. So first evidence is creation. The second one is the Old Testament story. It's the Exodus. This is the story on which the Old Testament builds. God freed a nation of slaves in Egypt, a race of slaves that descended from Abraham, to whom God liked and to whom He had made promises. God freed this nation of slaves without any rebellion on their part and without any army. And He took them out of a powerful nation and gave them a fertile country of their own. God did that to show Himself to the world. He's acting in human history. And He said He wants the world to see. He says repeatedly in Exodus, "All you nations, please watch. This is not just my power, this is the kind of thing He does. This is the kind of thing I do." A nation of slaves does not get freed and led to a good fertile land without rebellion and without an army in the world. I really doubt anything like that has ever happened. But it did happen, and God is introducing Himself to the world in human history. He's real, and that's the kind of thing He does. Everyone, He says, take note. And the third one is the other overwhelming act in human history, one other time, is raising Jesus of Nazareth from the dead. Jesus was famous for miracles, and they weren't power tricks. They were acts of healing and helping and freeing. And He was executed, and God raised Him from the dead on the third day. And we get careful stories of how His followers found the empty tomb and how they met Him and how they started talking about it. We can say, "I don't believe any of those stories." That's fine. Suit yourself. But God thinks He has made Himself evident in creation and in these two stories in human history. I'm not sure it's there's just one paragraph left. We're just about in the clear here. We live in a society that has taught itself to doubt everything, people. Do you understand that? It has taught itself to doubt everything. It prides itself on being skeptical and accepting nothing and questioning everything. Doubting has become virtuous. The whole thing is slanted to make Christianity improbable and a little ridiculous. Okay? We live in that world. Our society is slanted away from God's stories, and it is not easy for us to ignore that. So I just want you to understand the world we live in and how this is working, and I encourage you to hold fast to the faith we profess. God is the maker and carrier of creation, and He's not finished with it. Amen.